Sandra, I'm really a reluctant participant in this room. If I had to pick any other session to be in, it probably wouldn't be this one. But I've really been heavily lobbied by Cassandra, who's not only nice, she's incredibly talented and intelligent, as well as Greg, who kind of hit me over the head with a 2x4 and said, I need to get more involved in this issue. Because I've really been focusing more on other issues recently, like safe patient handling, which again is an overlap here with what Laura is trying to do in the nursing home chain. I've been doing a lot of work around emergency preparedness, including respiratory protection. You know, we're fighting the infection control folks. They don't want to fit test people for N95s. They don't even want to give them N95s. They just want to give them surgical masks. And I've been really focusing more on this whole issue of safety culture, so it'd be interesting to have a discussion on how there's an overlay between safety culture and some of these issues, because there really is a major lack of safety culture in the primary industry I work in. About a million of our 1.9 million members are healthcare workers, and this is an industry that's literally decades behind other sectors in dealing with a lot of these health and safety issues, let alone getting into this area of health promotion, except for there are some employers that are doing some things. So I really feel like a fish out of water. I'm out of my area. I can... And the fact that you're here means that you know a lot more about this issue than I do, so I hope that we can have a discussion when Greg is up here so that we can get different people's perspectives. So, I just have I've had historically a lot of skepticism about this issue. You know, we've seen situations where hospitals have put into place exercise rooms but they have mandatory overtime for nurses, and so that's kind of a mixed message. And I think healthcare workers, as Laura mentioned, folks are smarter than you think they are, and they can kind of tell, you know, if an employer is sincere or not. And that's a big mixed message. The other thing Laura mentioned, I believe, is typically, historically, the only, you know, designated break a lot of workers get is a smoke break. So, you know, a lot of times you talk to people, the reason they continue to smoke, and maybe Dr. Sorensen can speak to this issue. You know, it seems like that, and also it seems like the smokers have the most fun when you walk by the building. You know, they're out there smoking. I mean, why can't we have breaks for non-smokers? You know, I don't quite understand that, but maybe that can come out. So I spent most of my career trying to change the behavior of the employer. So this whole, you know, again, we start talking about behavioral safety, which is trying to change the behavior of each 1,000 workers and trying to change the behavior of one employer. Again, this whole issue of behavior change just is scary to me, and I know health promotion has a big element of behavior change, and again, there's this overlap that needs to be dealt with in a very cautious manner. With that said, you know, I think health. Bottom line is, you know, if this was a health promotion conference, this, you know, instead of an occupational health and safety conference, there'd probably be 10 times more people in this room, right? And there'd be some CEOs in the room, because the CEOs seem to really have the ear, you know, and the health promotion people really seem to have the ear of the CEOs when they look at the healthcare costs and trying to control those costs. When you realize that as long as we continue to have an employer-based healthcare system, which we don't really advocate anymore, we think it's a broken model, employers are going to be very concerned about trying to reduce their healthcare costs. So the train has left the station, and mixed the metaphors, you know, we need to hitch our horse to this wagon and really figure out how we move forward and try to link these issues, understanding that these folks seem to have a lot more visibility than folks that have been doing occupational health and safety work in a vacuum for many years. And you know, when you look at a lot of the health and safety issues that we have worked on over the years, like even going back to the 80s on asbestos in schools, it wasn't until we made it a kids issue. The campaign was asbestos in buildings, but nobody cares about workers necessarily, but if you can link it to kids, and it's the same thing here, if we can link occupational health and health promotion, maybe we can get some more traction on dealing with both issues like Laura's trying to do in some of her work, and how, as Dr. Sorensen has mentioned. So then when you look at the health status by occupation, federal health statistics on the folks that have the worst health status by occupation, three of the top 10 are our members, nurses, aides, who also have a very high rate of depression, one of the highest rates of depression. Child care workers, the average age of a child care worker, even though they're in the top 10 for the worst health status, is 35. And janitors, building service workers, those are all huge segments of our membership. So I do a lot of classes. You know, I see our members a lot, and their health isn't the best health, and I've seen an erosion in the last 25 years. I've seen them, you know, become heavier, and when I do walkthroughs, and actually when the union notices it, because when we bring people in to do lobby days in state legislatures or at the U.S. Capitol, you know, we need more people to help people get off the bus to walk up the steps to the Capitol to lobby their Congress members of Congress, and so it's really become quite a burden. You can see that our members are not practicing healthy lifestyles, and it's really taken a toll on their personal health. And in addition to the fact that they continue to face all of these health and safety hazards because of a lack of a safe patient handling program, for instance, in a nursing home. But the health actuaries, and I went to Greg's conference a couple in Bethesda, and I learned more. And they had this health actuary there from University of Maryland who made an incredibly compelling argument that all of this stuff is really cost-effective for employers. And you could actually give people $25 Target cards, maybe not Walmart, but Target cards. If they show up for, you know, they show up for their obesity class or their anti-smoking class, the employer is going to save money. Diabetes, again, cancer screening apparently is very cost effective. The diet, even at a CIU, on Monday mornings now we have healthy diets. We give out free flu shots because I brought that to their attention about 10 years ago, but they were using conventional needles and the nurse wasn't wearing gloves and they had no sharps container, so I got about 8 calls. You know, I did get my flu shot, but I don't know what else I caught in the process, but but I also read a statistic recently where the flu shot this year may only be 50% effective. But I would still urge you to get your flu shot. And some employers are really going overboard where they fire you if you don't get your flu shot. Some healthcare employers, like there's a hospital in Seattle called Virginia Mason, and I was recently on a panel with that. So that was a controversial panel. May not be as controversial as this one, but they were actually firing people for not getting the flu shot, which is kind of ridiculous when you realize that the effectiveness rate of the flu shot, even on a good year, is like about 70 or 80%. So employers that want to invest in their employees in the long term, it seems like this is a really good program, and we do have model employers. We always bring up the example of Kaiser Permanente. Perhaps this nursing home chain that Laura is working with is, again, trying to keep people employed. They're looking at long-term costs. And it's not dissimilar to what Kaiser tries to do with their patients. You know, Kaiser's the largest HMO in the country. They have 150,000 employees, primarily in the West Coast. But they have some clinics here on the East Coast, and they contract with hospitals. But they're real interested in making sure that their members, you know, are participants in a lot of these programs so that they can reduce their costs, because most of their members of the Kaiser HMO model are long-term members of the plan. So I'm going to be interested to see Laura's project results as it proceeds. But the problem is that I see in the country is that the fastest growing segment of the workforce are really contingent workers. And so I don't really know what the economic incentive is for employers for the more easily replaceable workers to really adopt these programs, because you know, they're making an investment in an employee that they don't really. First of all, they may not even be their employee, because they might be in hospitals they contract out cleaning services, for instance. So I don't really understand what the incentives might be there, and that would be an interesting point of discussion as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to Greg. And again, I know many of you in this room know a lot more about this issue, and I hope you participate in a general discussion, which I know is atypical for these meetings, but I think it's the most important, most valuable way to run such a meeting.